Gorakh sat down with his food at one of the mismatched tables along the street. The small eatery didn't do much tourist business because it was obviously run down, but Gorakh liked to eat there. As he'd grown up, his father had provided him money to eat out, so there was no need to hire someone. For a long time, Gorakh had simply thought his father too cheap to hire a woman to cook and clean. Then Gorakh had realized the illegal nature of his father's business, and that not hiring a woman to care for him also meant not having someone snooping around his house. The cell phone at his waist hung on him like an anchor. He knew his father was watching the woman archaeologist, and that he might be called upon at any moment to carry out a task. The man who approached Gorakh stood out at once. He was obviously British, or at least European, in his khakis and light jacket despite the heat. Wraparound sunglasses hid his eyes.
Hello, Gorakh. Mind a little company?
I don't know you.
But I know you. More than that, I know who your father is.
Then you should also know how dangerous it is to trouble me.
I don't want any trouble, Gorakh. Unless you decide not to listen to me.
What do you want?
I'm James Fleet, Special Operative for the International Maritime Bureau. Do you know what that agency is?
Vaguely.
A few days ago, an attack took place on a yacht. Maybe you've heard about it.
No.
Don't ever play poker, Gorakh. You can't lie well enough to bluff.
I could call the police. You don't have any authority in this city.
Go ahead. Ask for Inspector Ranga. In fact, maybe I should call him myself. He might like to be a part of this.
What do you want?
Can't remember. Let me take a look in my file here.
Gorakh stared down at the photographs spread beside his food on the table. The glossy pictures were of dead people's faces. Gorakh recognized them at once. The woman's face looked worse than he remembered. For a moment, he thought he was going to be sick.
Have you seen these people before?
No.
You're sure about that?
Yes, I am sure.
I don't believe you. I know your father had something to do with what happened to the people aboard that yacht. Inspector Ranga's crime scene investigators found where the blisters had been affixed. That vessel was smuggling, and I'm betting your father knew that. Now, I know you're going to tell your father about this. Feel free. Let him know I'm here and that he's already made one mistake too many. Now that I'm onto him, he'll make others.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You can run along now, Gorakh. I just wanted to introduce myself. We'll get to know each other better over the next few days.
Slowly, Gorakh got up from the table. Only a few men were at the other tables, and some of them knew who he was. Or at least, they knew who his father was. Without a word, his heart pounding, Gorakh walked down the street. He glanced back once and saw Fleet still sitting at the table as if he didn't have a care in the world. Gorakh lengthened his stride and wondered what it all meant. Then he wondered if telling his father about the encounter would be worse than the encounter itself, which would lead to more misery for him. That was something he didn't know. It was an hour into the dive, and Anya still loosely followed Paresh. When she saw the wavering shape off to the left, barely visible due to the depth and the distance, she thought at first it was an illusion, something dreamed up by her anxious mind. Curiosity got the better of her. She finned forward and caught up to Paresh. He didn't know she was there until she reached out and put a hand on his leg. He turned toward her. Anya pointed two fingers at her own eyes, then back in the direction where she'd seen the motion. Without waiting to see if he was going to follow, Anya flexed her legs and swam. Less than 30 yards away, she detected the movement again. It was along the sea floor. This time, she saw what it was, a length of sailcloth trapped amid coral reefs. Paresh started down immediately. Anya checked her depth gauge and found that they were already at a depth of 125 feet. Anything deeper for any length of time would require a different mix in their tanks. She grabbed Paresh's ankle and hampered his movements. His efforts also took her deeper. She could feel the depth now. She knew if they stayed down too long, they'd have to decompress on the way back up. And there was always the possibility of oxygen toxicity affecting the central nervous system. Paresh turned around in the water. His irritation showed plainly in his short, jerky movements. He held his palms up. Anya tapped her depth gauge. Paresh blinked at her through his face mask, then rolled his arm over and checked his own depth gauge. He held a finger up, signaling her to wait. He mimed going down and coming back up, then pointed at his eyes. Quick look. The murk and the diffraction of the water made it hard to judge the depth. Anya knew it could be anywhere from 10 to 50 more feet, possibly deeper, because they had no real frame of reference. Evidently unconcerned, Paresh swam down. Anya hung back, but her own curiosity pushed at her. She twisted her body and followed. The increased pressure of the ocean closed in around Anya. She focused on the sailcloth and thought about what might be hidden in the folds. Still, she made herself check her dive watch. They couldn't spend more than 2 minutes. Paresh reached the folds first. Fish that had taken up temporary residence in the loose canvas fled. A hermit crab scuttled sideways across the ocean floor and stirred up sand. Anya reached into the equipment bag tied at her waist and took out the underwater camera as Paresh swam around the perimeter of the canvas, head down to peer under the folds. A skeleton lay half submerged in the loose sand. This one was nearly intact, although the left arm was missing. A gold chain encircled the neck, and a ruby pendant lay inside the chest cavity. Paresh pointed at the necklace, but didn't try to take it. Anya signaled that she could see it too. With a quick flick of his fins, Paresh swam along the length of the sailcloth. He used one hand to gently lift the edge from the sand. After getting pictures of the skeleton, the necklace, and the sailcloth, Anya swam along the other side. Her excitement grew, and she knew she was going to have trouble leaving. Ignoring her, Paresh swam farther out into the open ocean. Anya put the camera back in the equipment bag and swam after Paresh. When she caught up to him, she pointed toward the surface. Paresh shook his head, tapped his dive watch, and held up 3 fingers. Adamantly, Anya shook her head and pointed toward the surface more emphatically. Looking upset, Paresh nodded. Then he caught himself and pointed farther out. Carefully, Anya rotated in the sea and stared in the direction Paresh had indicated. There, mired in the sand, lay a ship's timber. It was long and ancient-looking. Anya's heart raced. A ship's timber meant a ship was nearby. Unless someone lost one during a storm, Anya reminded herself, she had to calm down and take everything one step at a time. She tapped Paresh's shoulder. Together, they swam up. Anya took out her notebook, then checked the GPS coordinates. Paresh had come up only a few feet away. He pushed his face mask up. He stared at her and grinned.
You saw it?
I did.
The ship's timber.
A ship's timber. That could have fallen off a ship just a few years ago.
No. The canvas and the skeleton are there, too. The shipwreck is here.
A piece of it may be here. We need to recover that first and see what we have.
We are wasting time.
No, Paresh. We're doing a site recovery. This is how it's done.
Someone could come by and try to take everything we found.
If someone tries to dive this spot, we'll call the Coast Guard.
Anya got her bearings and saw the Casablanca moon coming back toward them for another pass. She waved both hands above her head, then swam for the dhow. She knew how Paresh felt. Impatience chafed at her, too.
You have found something down there, Anya.
We did.
Anya shrugged out of her scuba gear, and one of the crewmen took her tank from her. She accepted a towel that Captain Shafiq handed to her and began drying herself. Out of the water now, a momentary chill flashed over her, but the sun quickly started warming her. Lochata sat at the terminal and stared at the sonar image on the screen. Anya knew that she would need more specialized equipment if they were going to properly excavate the site of the mast. For instance, Trimix, a blended gas made up of oxygen, nitrogen, and helium that was easier to breathe during deeper dives.
We found sailcloth and a body, close to 150 feet down. We're going to need the Trimix tanks.
You worked with Trimix before?
On a few occasions.
You know about the problems with using it during shallow dives?
It's not safe, I know. That's why we'll be using rebreathers for that dive. They adjust the air mix automatically.
We could work a dive with you.
No. We'd only lose time.
Anya shot a glance towards Paresh. The young diver stood among his peers at the far end of the boat, out of earshot. From the way he was gesturing at his neck and pointing out to sea, Anya knew he was talking about the necklace. It was the wrong thing to talk about. They weren't there about the gold or the possibility of treasure. But now it wouldn't leave the minds of the other divers or the crew.
We'll take one of the lifeboats. We can work the recovery area from it. Let's stick with the search pattern. The tsunami could have scattered that shipwreck all over the ocean floor.
All the way back to his father's warehouse, Gorakhsh felt unfriendly eyes on him. He'd looked around as he made his way back, but he hadn't seen any sign of fleet. There were many other Europeans and Americans in Kanyakumari these days, though. Then he remembered the IMB agent's comment about Inspector Ranga. Gorakhsh realized if spies were lurking about, there was no guarantee they were white. Inside the warehouse, Gorakhsh felt a little more secure. Then he recalled that the IMB man was actually after his father. Whatever protection remained here was fading quickly.
Enter.
Rajiv Shivaji squinted at his son through a haze of cigarette smoke. His right hand had dropped to the open desk drawer beside him, but he'd made no move to reach inside, where he kept the big revolver he'd used to kill the woman aboard the yacht. The image of the woman's slack face in the autopsy photo ran through Gorakhsh's mind, but it only triggered the even worse memory of the woman's head snapping to the side as his father shot her to save him.
Something is wrong.
Yes, father.
What?
There is a man. An International Maritime Bureau agent named Fleet. He talked to me at lunch.
Where is this man?
I don't know. I left him there. He had pictures of those people on the yacht.
And what did this man want?
He said you've made one mistake too many.
If I'd made mistakes, he would be here now. He would be talking to me, not you. He doesn't have anything on me.
Then why did he show me the pictures of those people aboard the yacht?
To get a reaction from you. You're afraid. He was hoping to instill the same fear in me.
But how did he know about the yacht, father?
I don't know. It doesn't matter.
How can it not matter? They're closing in on us.
Sit, Gorakhsh. We're not going to stay here. We can walk away from this warehouse at any time and start a business somewhere else. As long as we're near the ocean, I can stay in business. Besides, most of our money isn't made through this warehouse. Like our ancestors before us, we take our bounty from the sea. Now, you said this man's name was Fleet?
Yes, father.
Do you know where he's staying?
No, I only encountered him minutes ago.
Perhaps you could have asked him. The time may have come to leave this place anyway. It appears the woman archaeologist, Anya Creed, might have truly found a shipwreck out there. If she's found the ship I think she's found, we're going to have to take it from her.
We are being watched. How can you even think about something like that?
Because that ship holds the secret to the remnants of Kumari Kandam.
Kumari Kandam? The sunken city? But father, that's a myth.
It has become a myth. But once Kumari Kandam was real, and somewhere it still exists, that ship may hold the secret to where it is. If they find what I think they will find, we're going to have to relieve them of that treasure.
How are you going to know what they find?
Because I have a man among their crew. I wasn't counting on those idiots you sent after the woman. If they had succeeded, perhaps we might have learned something. But we wouldn't have learned everything.